Talk given Sunday, 4th November, 1979. I want to read just a paragraph out of the chapter on Moses in The Heart of Religion. The shape of your life is determined by the peak on which you stand. Your standing ground is your inmost awareness, which is your point of transcendence. All your feeling and thought, speech and action is the expression of that awareness. Your standing ground changes. Whilst you are ignorant, disobedient, sinful, you are a pawn of fate, a tool of evil. Your peak is submerged in darkness. But if you care with pure passion, your peak is bathed in light. You stand on holy ground, on the peak which is God's, not yours. And on this peak, you are showered with transcendent blessing. This is the immortal. But you, the shape and life, which is the ephemeral body-mind, are part of mortality. Body-mind is the stuff of duality, conflict, wear and tear. Its movement through time and space is doomed to include error, fading away, disintegration. So, the organism necessarily perishes, whether your standing ground is submerged in darkness or bathed in light. So, he who bore the name Enoch, or Moses, or Elijah, or Jesus, died. Now this paragraph was written in connection with what we find in Exodus chapter 4, where Moses ascends to the Mount of the Lord, and there he meets his brother Aaron. Now this ascent to the Mount of the Lord means the entry into the supreme meditative state possible to man. It is the state of the true Unio Mystica, where oneself is in complete harmony, in true union with the totality, with transcendence itself. Now the point at which transcendence touches us is the deepest element in our consciousness. And consciousness is that which we cannot know for ourselves here and now in the terms in which we ordinarily know anything or and everything. Because here and now we function in terms of the senses and the logical discursive mind, and they have their limitations which we can only transcend in the profounder, the deeper states of consciousness, the thing which we cannot touch, which we cannot see, which is of the nature of the infinite, the eternal, the immortal. In Hebrew terminology, they called it neshama. And that is the transcendent in us, which is our point of contact with transcendence in its total reality. Now, if consciousness is that which we cannot deal with directly as we are here and now, then how does consciousness enter into that state? Consciousness enters that state only through the purification of the heart and the mind, of the psyche, first and foremost. The psyche expresses all our qualities which function in terms of duality, of conflict, of confusion, of ignorance, and so on. It also functions in terms of what we commonly, in our dual terms, say are the good qualities. But our good is not the absolute good, the real innermost good, which completely transcends our dualistic good and evil. Through the purification of the heart, that is to say, what we commonly call the moral purification, the virtues which are real virtues with us, even at this level, are transformed into their transcendent condition. And what we call our vices are so transmuted, the psychical energy, the ill-expressed, misshapen psychical energy, which is ill-expressed as our vices, is transmuted into the good. And this is one of the mysteries of what we call our spiritual progress and of the process of maturing of the mind in us. That if any one of the duals is fully understood and fully dealt with, completely dealt with in the right way, then both duals become transformed into this transcendent condition. One is taken out of the context of the finite, the temporal, and the mortal into the context of the infinite, the eternal, and the immortal. Do you see what I'm driving at? That whichever dual you tackle, whichever dual you can deal with through complete attentiveness and mindfulness, transforms the psychical energy of both into the perfect state. And so you are free of the duality altogether. By the purification of the mind, I am referring particularly to the purification of the intellect. From our birth, we are conditioned in such a way that the intellect is the slave of desire. Desire which we do not question, which we do not examine usually, but pursue it relentlessly and usually to our own detriment. But what are the obstructive influences in the intellect? Our prejudices, our preconceptions, and our assumptions, none of which have any warrant whatsoever in terms of truth in the fully religious sense, which is in the sense of that transcendent condition where our dualistic good and evil do not exist anymore. Now, this transformation of our being can happen only in mind and consciousness. So when this purification takes place, and as it takes place, this mysterious element in our being, consciousness, which we cannot deal with and tackle as such, becomes deeper and deeper, which means that its sensitivity, its contact with that which is transcendence, becomes so powerful, so complete, that in supreme fulfillment there is no separation between the human and the divine. And in fact, the very word human, if you look carefully into its meaning, means nothing less than the divine itself. The real meaning of the word human is the blissful creator. And to whom do we ascribe blissful creativeness and creation? But to God or Brahman or Atma or Ramazda or Allah or whatever name you like to use. It is that which is, if you like, non-theistic, non-personalistic terms, it is that which is the absolute. Now we must well appreciate that we function therefore in two contexts as and when this purification has taken place. On the one hand, our bodily existence implies that we do function in this world and in terms of our sense functioning and logical discursive mental processes, we do function in the context of the finite, the temporal, and the mortal. But as and when the psyche is completely purified, something new has emerged, something which the world doesn't know anything about. What is this something new which has emerged? One is able to be conscious, and I'll soon explain what I mean by conscious in this context. One is able to be conscious in terms of the infinite, the eternal, and the immortal, without losing or diminishing contact with the finite, the temporal, and the mortal. And in fact, our functioning in this sphere here, on this earth, in our everyday life, in the realm of the finite, temporal, and mortal, is far more perfect, far more sensitive, far more practical, and so on, than when we are in our imperfect state. Our state of confusion, our state of conflict, and all the rest of it. At the same time, one is conscious in that transcendent condition too. Now, what is the implication of consciousness in these two contexts? In the context of the finite, the temporal, and the mortal, we are discriminatively conscious. That is, we separate things, we analyze things. We have to do that because the world, as the manifested universe, does consist of entities, of identities, which come into being, which go through the process of growth, decay, death, and so forth. And they have their own specific characteristics, which can be distinguished from the characteristics of any other entity as such. We ourselves, as psychophysical organisms, are such finite entities. So we have to function in such a manner that we can live in right relationship, in harmony with all the other entities that constitute our environment and, if you like, the whole world. And if we can do that, it implies that we are also able to enter and function in terms of the transcendent context. Now, consciousness in the transcendent context is not discriminative. Here, when we know something, we can say, yes, I know this, I know that, I heard this, I read that, I studied this, I can do this, I know this. You see, we say no in that sense. But in the transcendent context, I can only use the phrase that it is an unknowing knowing. The brain won't know it. The brain is the most concrete expression of this universal energy, or rather this universal archetypal form of the one primordial creative energy which releases cosmos out of chaos and maintains cosmos in a cosmic order. So the brain knows all that only in terms of finitude, of temporality and mortality. So we are discriminatively conscious here, and we are unknowingly conscious in the supreme sense, but a consciousness which is the uttermost reality of consciousness that man can ever realize. So it is an unknowing knowing, and the two function together, of which the transcendent consciousness is the root, the very source, the continuously creative, inspiring source of our life and being, if only we let it be so. Because that state is non-compulsive. The primordial creative energy never compels, in our sense of the term compel. This is a tremendous mystery, because although it never compels, it is that supreme power which enables all things to come to their fruition ultimately, somehow or other. And if they do not come to the full fruition intended for, I have to use a word like intended, which belongs to discriminative consciousness, intended for that particular species, well, those elements are, in our terms, regarded as wastage. But this process is bound to occur. It is wastage only in terms of that particular species coming to fruition through the innumerable expressions, finite expressions, which constitute that species. Now we have to bear all this in mind. And then we will really begin to understand something at least, we'll get a real glimmer only, of the profound meaning of religion and religious living. What is the practical importance to us of understanding, of being able to respond sensitively to this sort of understanding of transcendence? The practical importance is just this, that it so changes our own inner discriminative consciousness as it is, that we do not make mistakes. Mistakes which bring unnecessary sorrow and suffering to ourselves and in our lives, especially through the wrong relationships, the unhappy relationships which spring up between man and man, within the family, within the community, within the nation, and internationally. We can be saved from all that only through the transformation of our mode of awareness of existence out of the finite mortal condition into the infinite immortal condition. Again, bear in mind, one cannot deliberately set out and say, oh, now I'm going to change my consciousness. You can't. It changes only through the, how shall I put it, reflex action, or perhaps I'm using a wrong phrase, but only through the fact that the psyche and the intellect, the emotions and the intellect are all transformed, transmuted. This transmutation and the process of its transmutation is the sole technique, if you like, if you want a technique, a method of living religiously. Do remember, the word religion, derived from re, ligare, means to bind back to transcendence. That's its fundamental meaning, to bind back. But bind not in the sense of bondage, but to allow oneself to be restored to the transcendent. Put it that way. Transcendence never binds. The primordial creative energy in bringing forth the cosmos has instilled every single manifestation with the eternal order of things. It's there, inherent in everything. And if you observe universal process carefully, you will see that everything obeys this fundamental law of its own being. As far as I'm aware, it's only man on this globe who has the power to go against it. And there's an extremely good reason for so constituting man. It was nature which constituted man, and nature, as you know, is Mrs. God. It's nature which so constituted us that this power of choice to say yea, to say no, lies within us. Now, after all, the human race is extremely young. We are only 3 or 4 million years, or maybe 7 or 8 million years old, and we have a possibility of another 2,000 million, unless somebody goes mad, presses the wrong button, and all mankind might disappear off the globe. But the primordial creative energy will not be the least bit disturbed if man, the species, is foolish enough to do that, and criminal enough to do that. Because that which can create the universe as it is can easily dispense with any of us. We are so conceited that we think that we are what, the crown of creation and evolution and all that. That's just our own folly. But forget all that. So now, we have a long span before us. And as we grow, and unquestionably we do grow whilst we are alive in terms of that which is imperfect. Because we are enabled to see what in us obstructs the transcendent life trend in the human species. And as we come to see it and understand it, in that seeing and understanding, a complete seeing and a complete understanding, no excuses made for oneself and so forth, is the real diagnosis as well as the medicine which enables the sick psyche to be transformed into the completely whole, the perfect, the holy psyche. When that happens, the psyche is utterly empty. It's a strange thing to say, but it is utterly empty. In being empty, it is of the nature of the infinite, the eternal, and the immortal. It is completely clean. It is transparent. What then shines through this unobstructing, unresisting, transparent psyche but the light of transcendence itself? One might say, this, that, and the argument may be brought forward against it. Right, bring forward all your arguments. I am not going to answer them. You find out for yourself. Because if I answer them, your brain, which brought forward these arguments, will continue arguing against me. Because we are natural egoists and we are vain. We think we are right. Anybody here who knew a time in his life when he said, I am not right? Perhaps sometimes we confess that with a view, I suppose, to gain some good end for ourselves ultimately. So you see, that's what we are like. Now this undergoes a complete transformation. So we have the two contexts which we must understand. The context of the finite and the mortal, and the context of the infinite and the immortal. Now just a word about the use of a term like eternity. Has anyone really begun to have an understanding of what that word could mean? The usual meaning given, the usual thing is that eternity is identified with timelessness. It is considered as the opposite of time. Now I suggest that we can go deeper, we can transcend those two concepts. As regards the second statement, that eternity is the opposite of time, we can dismiss that out of hand for this reason. The transcendent rejects nothing. The transcendent subsumes everything. Because we are three-dimensionally conscious, where space is concerned, we can conceive of and practically deal with what we call a surface, a line, and a point. But whatsoever is beyond three-dimensional space consciousness is a blank to us. So you see, the three-dimensional space consciousness completely subsumes within itself the other types of space consciousness. Now in the same way, you will find that consciousness working at its transcendent level is something which does not reject time at all. Time, as we see it and understand it, is all included in that. And at our level too, time has two aspects. One is the mechanical clock. We invented clocks. And we invented a chronometric measure of time in its actual physical reality. A chronometric measure. The tick-tock is pretty inaccurate. The atomic clock is incredibly accurate. But both those are mechanical measurements. Now, what is time in its actuality in the world of the living universe? Time is the rhythm of the living process of everything and every person and every creature. It is the rhythm of the living process. The entire universe is a live universe. Thank God for modern science that in the last 15 years it has been shown by quite an important group of scientists that what we have called inanimate matter is by no means inanimate. It functions like a living thing. There is a living process going on. Right. Now, the rhythm of this living process. And everything alive has its own life rhythm. This rhythm of the living process is the actuality of time at our level of the finite, the temporal, and the mortal. And when this rhythm is something to which we really wake up in our inner being, then consciousness thrills in response to it, and the outer expressions of our consciousness being awake to that are shown in the fact that we are not out of tune, out of step with the world process as it goes on. Think what a difference that would make to human relationships and to the whole process of life. A very great difference indeed. So now, chronometric time we can just leave aside. It is necessary for keeping appointments and so forth. Not really necessary for having dinner or anything, because that is a matter of your actual physical life rhythm. It has nothing to do with clocks. Right. And this other thing, the rhythm of the living process in terms of finitude and mortality gets into complete tune with the rhythm of the transcendent consciousness's living process. And that is eternity. It is not time. It is not the timeless. Timelessness is something you and I do experience, can experience, when we are completely attentive, wholly attentive to something, and completely observant. We are in full relationship with it. In that state, the ordinary sense of time disappears, and that is a timeless condition. But it is a timeless condition only temporarily, because we enter into that state in time, say on a Monday morning, and we may stay in that state for a day, 2 days, up to 7 days, or whatever it may be, and then finally we have to emerge out of it because of the demands of the body itself. You have to emerge out of it. So this timelessness is bounded by temporality. So you see, eternity is neither timelessness nor time as such. Now, do try and sort of begin to understand it if you can't get it at once, but you will understand it. Because if you do, then consciousness will exert its influence in a totally different manner and bring about changes in your actual external circumstance, in your relationships with others and so forth. So many problems, such a heap of unnecessary sorrow and suffering will fall off your shoulders just like that. Don't believe a word of what I say. Don't reject it out of hand. Consider it. Consider it quietly, without prejudice, without preconception or assumption. You will naturally find preconceptions coming up, because arguments will rise up in the brain for or against what is said. Set them aside. Say, oh yes, now this is how the brain is functioning. You come to know your whole self as you are in the finite, temporal, and mortal state. And here and now, in your own finite mortal being, this transmutation takes place. And man, the human, in the true sense of the word human, comes to fruition. Now, just one other point in this connection. You will see that there are two psychologies involved here. And whilst I've talked of two contexts, and I'm now trying to talk of two psychologies, do remember, they are not two. I have to talk in terms of two, because otherwise one can't talk at all. At least I can't talk at all. I don't know the language of transcendence. which is a silence in actual fact, a complete silence, which is not the opposite of sound, but subsumes all sound also. Now, the two contexts as such and the two psychologies are all part and parcel of one single, unitarily whole, total reality, whatsoever it may be. It is all part and parcel of the one primordial creative energy, whose creative action in eternity brings forth all that we can realize here and now. Now, the two psychologies are these. There is the psychology of the sick psyche. We all know about that, or at least we think we know something about it. I say we think we know something about it for the very simple reason that as long as my own mind is conditioned, as long as I'm suffering from prejudices, preconceptions and assumptions and so forth, then my observation of another's psyche is tainted by my imperfections, and the diagnosis is an imperfect diagnosis. And therefore, the medicine which I will deal out as a practicing psychotherapist will also suffer, to some extent at least, from my imperfections. But when the psyche is completely pure, we have an utterly new phenomenon. There are no more prejudices, preconceptions, assumptions, any of the so-called vices, any of the defilements of the mind. The mind in us has at last come to full maturity, and then we are indeed a true body-mind organism, the human being who is the blissful creator. So there are the two psychologies. Now when one, through the religious life, and this is the deep meaning of living religiously, so to live that this comes into being. Through the living of the religious life, when oneself has become the perfected Holy One, then he already knows the sick psyche in its true sickness, without any flaws in his judgment of that true sickness. And he also knows the psychology of the psyche, which is the utterly pure thing. Again, refer to your Greek myth, Eros and Psyche, and try and understand it in a profounder way, and you will find extraordinary meaning in that. Don't reject any of the mythologies of the world. They are all full of the profoundest wisdom, if one only knew how to see. So there are these two psychologies which we have to deal with.